Our doctor is in, and so are the doctors of Capital Health. Welcome to the all-new Health 411. Every Sunday morning at 10, Dr. Jonathan Karp, along with our respected panel of guests from Capital Health, take you on an important medical journey to help you navigate your health and the healthcare system to reach your destination, good health. Health 411 is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.
107.7 The Bronc and 107.7TheBronc.com. Proudly nominated for a National Association of Broadcasters 2019, 2021, 2022, and 2023 Marconi Award for Best College Radio Station, as well as a winner of the 2023 IBS College Media Award for universities under 10,000 students. We are broadcasting from the Bronx All Digital Studios on the campus of Rider University. Welcome to Health 411. I am your host, Professor Jonathan Karp. This Health 411 program is presented by Capital Health. We discuss a variety of issues affecting health and wellness, public health, healthcare policy, and the science of health and healthcare. Our goal is to expand your knowledge and your perspective. Today, Daniel Geller, our student producer, and I are joined in the studio by Dr. Africa Wallace and Dr. Deanna Coleman, both of Capital Health Medical Center. Both our doctors today are interventional pulmonologists, Dr. Africa Wallace is a repeat guest on this program when our audience has met her before, but our audience has not met Dr. Deanna Coleman. So Dr. Coleman, welcome. And you can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you chose interventional pulmonology?
Absolutely. Hi. Thank you so much for having me here on your channel today. I'm very excited. I'm a fellowship trained interventional pulmonologist. Just so you guys know what it is, interventional pulmonologist is a subspecialty within the field of pulmonary medicine. And the specialty focuses on using minimally invasive procedures to diagnose and treat various conditions in the respiratory system. So majority of procedures that I do are based on lung nodules, lung masses, so diagnoses and early actual diagnoses of lung cancers, staging, as well as other procedures for benign diseases within the airways and pleural cavity. The procedures are typically less invasive than traditional surgical methods. Those procedures are done on outpatient basis and they're the same day procedures. Why did I choose this field? Throughout my years of training, I've been always interested in doing procedures, being involved in patient care. I did train for my pulmonary critical care fellowship at Temple, and this was the time when I did work with a lot of transplant patients and encountered multiple complications after transplantation. And this is when I started working with one of our thoracic surgeons over there, who introduced me to rigid bronchoscopy. It's one of those therapeutic procedures that are being used to fix patients' airways after complications post-transplant. So this is kind of how I got into it, as well as my husband also was interventional pulmonologist at that time and kind of pushed me also to it. So interestingly, we are the only married couple in the United States who are trained and who perform interventional pulmonology. Extremely rewarding field because it's non-invasive. Patients who I deal with have a lot of airway disease. They cannot breathe. So even fixing, putting stents into their airways, opening them up, draining fluid, putting catheters in the chest to get rid of fluid that's accumulating due to different diseases, is very rewarding to see those patients do better and have quality of life and to be able for them to get through different treatments.
Cool. Is your husband also at Capital Health with you?
No, he's not. He's in Jefferson.
Oh, okay.
He's our competitor.
That's an interesting kind of thing. And so you mentioned two things that stick out to me is your patients and the technique. So let's begin with your patients. Who are the patients that typically have lung issues and what are they?
A lot of patients that Dr. Wallace and myself are seeing are patients with lung cancers. Also, patients with just small lung nodules, and those lung nodules can be related to what those patients are doing in their lives, like smoking, exposures, medications, autoimmune diseases. So these patients are being seen by Dr. Wallace and myself in our lung nodule clinic, and we work them up and put them through appropriate channels for biopsies, surgeries, and then subsequent other subspecialties that need to be involved depending what type of disease we're dealing with.
So what is a lung nodule exactly?
So it's a spot in your lung. It's a your tissue within the lung, the little air sacs that you have, they're infiltrated with cells that should not be there. Doesn't mean that at all times those this tissue is abnormal like cancer. There can be benign processes, but that's what it means. It's a spot in your lung.
And so did your practice change with all the lung issues related to COVID that we've had the past couple of years?
We definitely have noticed, and Dr. Wallace can also mention about that. I've noticed much more lung nodules showing up with patients who did have COVID. And surprisingly, these are people who did not even have respiratory symptoms with COVID. They were just diagnosed because they were traveling. But COVID has created a lot of inflammatory changes within lung tissue, airways that led to inflammation. And as you know, inflammation, progresses, there can be scar tissue and that can lead to appearance of a nodule in your lung.
Do vaccines help prevent that? Vaccines, people say, oh, it's going to keep you from getting sick, or if you get sick, it's not going to be so severe. But do they protect against some of these lung issues that are coming about?
So vaccinations for COVID specifically definitely decrease. You can still get COVID, but it does decrease how sick you get. I don't think we have enough data right now to tell you that prevents you from having lung nodules for sure. Mm-hmm. But it does prevent patients from being hospitalized and death. You can still get COVID, but you don't get that sick.
Cool.
And there's Dr. Wallace. There's really no data to support that it has any impact on the inflammatory changes that you might see on imaging studies. So there hasn't been any studies to give us an answer one way or another that it either makes it better or makes it worse.
Cool. So when you guys look at your x-rays and do all your things, you can't tell if somebody's had COVID or not just by looking at their lungs or probing their lungs kind of stuff. That's pretty much what you're saying.
There are specific radiographic changes that are associated with COVID, but they also
What are they? Just curiosity.
They also can mimic other disease processes that we've seen in the past, but inflammatory opacifications and diffuse inflammatory responses is kind of the signs that the radiologist would see and would say or read as maybe associated with COVID or something like that. Just as they would talk about a differential, meaning it could be pneumonia, inflammatory response, it could be autoimmune disease, but COVID may be on that list as well based on what the scans look like.
So I'm gonna translate and say an idiopathic lung inflammation. Does that about right?
Pretty much. I mean, it's caused by an inflammatory response called by the virus.
Cool. And the second thing, Dr. Coleman, that you talked about was one of the things that got you interested in interventional pulmonology were the techniques that you were doing. And before we started recording, Dr. Wallace said you guys have some new techniques and some new technologies at Capital Health. Can you tell us what kinds of things she was talking about and what was it that got you so excited about this career path?
So we are actually very excited about our robotic bronchoscopy. We launched this month we did our first three cases. So just to give you a little bit of a history, prior to robotic bronchoscopy, we had something called navigational bronchoscopy. So we put manually camera into patients' lungs after we recreated airways in a 3D image, and we tried to drive with our hands manually a scope into the nodule and do biopsies. Now the new technology that we have, the robotic bronchoscopy is based on a shape sensing technology, which is absolutely incredible. And what's different about this, we still recreate lungs in a 3D image so we can find the airway that leads us straight to a lesion, which that minimizes the risk of lung collapse. With robotic bronchoscopy, lung collapse risk is less than 4%. But what's great about this technology, and now we have this arm that has a catheter with camera that we can drive in through the airways with controllers. And once we reach the designated area of interest, that camera just stays there. So we are hands-free, and we don't have to worry about things moving, shifting. We can deploy our instruments and get as much tissue as we can in the easiest way and being most precise.
Excellent. I want to hear more about this, but we need to take a break for underwriting announcements. And I'm curious because I've actually had bronchoscopies done. So we'll be right back with Health 411 after these underwriting announcements. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com. We're recording Health 411 from the Digital Bronx Studios. Welcome back. I'm Professor Jonathan Karp, and here on Health 411, we are continuing our conversation with Dr. Africa Wallace and Dr. Deanna Coleman. Both are interventional pulmonologists at Capital Health Medical Center. And at the end of the last segment, Dr. Coleman was telling us about this new robotic bronchoscopy procedure. And I mumbled right at the end, I've had bronchoscopies. I actually had one go bad. That was not good. And just not to make it about me, but some of the things that you said you were avoiding, it sounds like would have helped me a couple years ago when I had this done, because at the end of my bronchoscopy, they could not get tissue samples and I was spitting up blood for a while. It sounds like this robotic procedure would be a vast improvement over that. And I'm not trying to scare people from the procedure. I'm just saying that's what happened to me.
Well, I think it is a vast improvement.
Okay.
The earlier techniques, and you know, like Dr. Coleman said, the risk profile is significantly less. The diagnostic yield is much higher. So you certainly would have benefited from.
Yeah, it sounds like you can actually see where you're doing the punch biopsies now, instead of being guided by an ultrasound.
We still use those same techniques.
Okay.
We use direct visualization, we use ultrasound, and we also use almost like a CT scanner, 3D imaging that will allow us to better localize where the nodule is, and again, increase our diagnostic yield and our accuracy.
Oh, that's great. I wish I had come to you guys in today's world instead of when I was doing mine. Unfortunately, that's really great. So I know what my presentation was by the time I actually got to the medical center for a bronchoscopy. What do you see as a typical patient who presents? Like, what is it? Is it an old person who already knows they have lung cancer? Is it a child who's wheezing? Is it somebody in the middle with work exposure to something? Who shows up? Who gets referred?
So in our lung nodule clinic, it's really nodules that have been found incidentally most often. So you are being worked up for something else, such as a cold, or you have abdominal pain and you get a CAT scan either in the emergency room or your primary care physician has ordered a scan, you're getting a calcium score from your cardiologist. Those imaging studies will pick up lung nodules incidentally. And so when they're found, you know, the most providers aren't clear about how to handle them, what they mean. Mm-hmm. And so they send them to us, who are the experts in lung disease. We then decipher based on the characteristics on the scan and based on the patient's risk factors, we then sort of decide what category would fit in. And the three categories are infection, inflammation, or cancer. And then we have to decide the likelihood of where this nodule will fall. Once it gets to a certain size, then the recommendation would be a biopsy so we could have a definitive, some diagnostic clarity about exactly what this lung nodule is.
Cool. And I just want to, I'm not trying to scare anybody. I really want to say this under my experience, I was in that very small percentage of things didn't go right. So if you have any of those issues, and I don't think anybody should be scared about doing the diagnostic kinds of things. And the thing that about the techniques that Dr. Coleman mentioned was you said there was a 3D image now in the bronchoscopy. So that gives you sort of a virtual reality type look when you're in the lung doing this. Is that what we're imagining going on?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
Nothing is perfect. Uh-huh. That's why when Dr. Wallace have mentioned, we still use other tools to make sure we confirm where we at. And I think mm-hmm. that's what makes this technology so amazing, that we are able to integrate multiple different platforms to get the best yield and be most precise.
Cool. And does interventional radiology always involve biopsy, taking something out of the lungs, or can you learn just by seeing nowadays? Because you can see. You can see things in three dimensions. You can see size, you can see shape, you can see, I don't know if it's color or not. Do you actually always have to take something out?
So being able to see things either virtually on a scan will still remain our best guess, even with
size,
the characteristics, even seeing it with the scope. The gold standard remains tissue diagnosis. So if we want to definitively diagnose something, tissue is the gold standard.
So the newer ways are sort of at the cutting edge of doing things, and they have to sort of be refined and more fully adopted. Is that what I'm hearing a little bit?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And so when I show up at your clinic and I've been referred for this non-specific thing, maybe a shadow in my lung on an x-ray or something like that, what's my patient experience like?
Fantastic. That's what I was right. So you've got the most amazing thoracic surgeon, and that's Dr. Wallace. Mm-hmm. So she's obviously a person who will cut all the lesions out that need to be cut out. But I think we have a very good process. We have a nurse navigator, or we have a social worker, we have nurse practitioners with our team. I think we've got very good approach to make sure that patients, when everything is described, patients are taken care of. If support system is needed, we're able to provide that as well. And I think the biggest part, Dr. Wallace, is that we do discuss our cases in multidisciplinary meetings. We do have two more board with oncologists, radiation oncologists, research coordinators, and cases are discussed. So we know what will be the best way to approach those patients and what needs to be done further down the line after diagnosis.
Yeah. So.
If I can speak to the patient pathway specifically, if you look at the standard patient pathway across the country, typically it's an incidental finding either through screening or on a scan, and that patient, and then a nodule is identified on the imaging. That patient could actually be funneled into various directions where they either see a medical oncologist, an interventional pulmonologist, interventional radiologist, or a thoracic surgeon. And many times they actually see more than one provider before they even have a diagnosis. On average, the time from detection to the time to diagnosis across the country is 5.4 months. our system is shortening that time. We are impacting the time from detection to treatment by shortening the time from detection. When you come to our clinic, once it's detected, you're seen within a week. Our lung navigator will triage the patients and decide which provider will see them based on size. We guarantee that within 10 days to 2 weeks that you will have a biopsy if needed, have additional imaging. We then do your further workup, but in a shorter amount of time, because we want our time from detection to diagnosis to be, and we've given ourselves, as it's a self-inflicted, I'm gonna call it, 2 weeks to get a diagnosis. With this new technology, we can even, I always say change the game in that not only will we be able to diagnose you, if it's appropriate, you can be treated all in the same setting with this new technology. So that then shortens the time to treatment even more. Again, across the country, it takes 70 days from the time of diagnosis to treatment. And we're saying we can get you from diagnosis to treatment under certain circumstances within the same setting. So that, that goes from 70 days to a couple hours. So that's what this new platform is going to provide us as we try to impact the delivery of cancer care in the country.
Yeah. And just to add it on also, with our new robots, we are looking into hopefully doing diagnosis and treatment with surgical resection under the same anesthesia. So that means, let's just say I would do robotic bronchoscopy to get tissue. If it's confirmed cancer, then Dr. Wallace would flip the patient and she would resect the cancer under the same anesthesia, which I think that would be groundbreaking and amazing for our patients to be treated within the same day.
Cool. And I want to hear more about that, but we're going to take a break for our underwriting announcements. You are listening to 107.7 The Bronc and 1077thebronc.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronc is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health. There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronc and 1077thebronc.com. Welcome back to Health 411. I'm Professor Jonathan Karp, and I'm here with Dr. Deanna Coleman and Dr. Africa Wallace from Capital Health Medical Center. Both doctors are interventional pulmonologists, and we're hearing some of the neat things that Capital Health does is improving the time it takes from, you know, diagnosis, biopsies to potential treatment. As somebody whose research involves, you know, stress and physiology, I think that's great because the longer patients have to wait, the more stress they get. And I'm wondering if you see that. Is that one of the motivating things to have things sort of go faster, is to reduce the stressful experience for the patients?
Yeah, that's certainly part of it. You want to reduce the stress and anxiety that the patient has when they've been, told that a lung nodule has been detected. And mm-hmm. I think the first thing people think of is cancer, although that's not always the case. But more importantly, the decreasing the time to treatment improves overall outcomes. There's data that show it improves mortality rates and survival rates. So ultimately, that's our goal, to improve survival rates, and we know that decreased time of treatment can do that. It also decreases the cost of cancer care. As cancer care is delayed, it becomes more expensive to care for these patients when they present at a later stage.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to follow up, Dr. Wallace, and this is, I think, for somebody listening, is you guys talk about nodules, you talk about cancer, but I'll just ask this, because is every nodule cancer, or what's some of the other things that these nodules could be?
nodules are common. So yes. When the landmark study that was done in 2011, that was when we determined that using CAT scans was the most appropriate way to detect lung nodules. But 30% of those patients had lung nodules that turned out not to be cancer. So it's very common. All nodules don't turn out to be cancer. What they found in that study was that those patients that are that have high risk factors, and those factors are ages 50 to 80, a 20-pack year history, and an active smoker or quit less than 15 years ago, those are the patients that we then focus on because their risk of cancer is significantly higher.
Interesting. And you mentioned 20-pack year history. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so when we calculate pack year histories, we ask the patient, how long have you been smoking? And we ask more granular questions like, what age did you start and what age did you stop? So let's say you smoked for 20 years. And then the next question is, how many packs a day did you smoke? So if you smoked one pack a day for 20 years, that's a 20-pack year history. If you smoked two packs a day for 20 years, that's a 40-pack year history. So we calculate the pack year history, and essentially that signifies the amount of exposure you've had to cigarette smoking.
Now, with two interventional pulmonologists in the room, I'm going to ask, are you guys surprised how many people still smoke cigarettes given what's known about it?
A lot of people still smoke.
Yes.
And a lot. And they're having a very hard time quitting smoking, mm-hmm. that's for sure.
And so how do you think about the insurgence of vaping nowadays with younger and younger people doing that?
So vaping has become becoming an issue. And I'm sure you can see 2019, 2020, where we had a lot of data coming up with vaping-associated lung injury, something called VALI, especially amongst middle schoolers, high schoolers, and then a young generation of patients. It's associated with a lot of inflammatory changes within lung tissue. It can cause symptoms of shortness of breath, cough. Patients can develop inflammatory changes within the lung tissue that can eventually lead to developing scar tissue that can be detrimental to decompensating and eventually needing even a lung transplant. Mm-hmm.
And so is this going to accelerate, do you think? I think it's sort of interesting. It's a real thing. If it has its own abbreviation of VALI, which I hadn't heard before, there's enough of this around that people are seeing it. Is this going to decrease your patient age as opposed to somebody who's, like Dr. Wallace said, like 50 to 80 who's been smoking for lots and lots of years? Are we going to start seeing more and more young people in your clinic?
So go
ahead, Dr. Wallace.
And I want you to piggyback off of this. I don't think that vaping has been directly associated with lung cancer yet. Vaping hasn't been around long enough to see it. What we do know is when they started the studies and with cigarette smoking, there's actually a 20 to 25 year lag time from the time of your exposure to the time that the cancer develops and is detected. So vaping hasn't been around long enough to bear out that it has a causal effect on lung cancer.
Okay. Now, some of the people who vape, and I've talked to them because some of them are on our campus here, they say things to me like, well, I'm not getting the tar and nicotine and all the plant byproducts I get because I'm inhaling these chemicals.
You do get the nicotine, though.
You can get the nicotine. So with two pulmonologists in the room, how would you train me to answer that?
I mean, if you listen to yourself say, I'm inhaling chemicals, enough.
That's fair. That's well done. I can adopt that with people who I know who are vaping. Dr. Coleman, what would you say to people if you are around the 20-something year olds that I'm here?
It's not even the nicotine. Nicotine obviously works on your pleasure receptors. It causes a lot of also damage to DNA in our cells, but it's other chemicals. A lot of vaping products contain vitamin A, mm-hmm. And that's detrimental to a decline in lung function and causing inflammatory changes leading to different type of pneumonias or respiratory failures.
No, so I have a question. I'm going to shift gears a little bit here. You hear sort of a lot about interventional these days, interventional pulmonology, interventional radiology, interventional cardiology. And on top of that, you have so many other specialties across the hospital. How do you work together with other specialties and subspecialties to give the best outcome for patients?
Dr. Wallace, so I'm going to take this one first and Dr. Wallace can comment afterwards. I think communication is very important. I think not thinking I'm the best in everything. I think everybody has limitation, and what makes me smart and a good physician and a different specialty is to actually say, hey, let's talk about it and let's try to find different approaches or different avenues how we can solve this case or help this patient. So I think it comes down to communication.
So I believe the multidisciplinary approach to any disease process, and particularly to cancer care, is really the most efficient most efficient and best way to approach most of these disease processes, including GI diseases that are benign, cardiovascular disease now is approached in a multidisciplinary approach. And so, for example, I'm not an interventional pulmonologist, I'm actually a surgeon, but Dr. Coleman and I work together so well that we approach the patient, in a similar fashion. We are constantly communicating about what is the best treatment plan for this patient. In leaving our biases aside, I am a big believer in surgery and surgical care, and she believes in sort of, the interventional approach to it. But we come together and say, what is going to benefit this patient most, not necessarily what will benefit us. And so I think that is the key to our partnership, and not just her and I. There's a huge group of us, radiologists, interventional radiologists, radiation oncologists, medical oncologists, pulmonologists, interventional pulmonologists, and surgeons. We on a weekly basis get together, look at these nodules and say, what is the best diagnostic approach? What is the best treatment plan? And so that's really the way to approach cancer care. And quite frankly, it's spilling over into all different disease processes now. Mm-hmm.
So is cancer of the lung usually just in the lung? Or do you guys view cancer as a body-wide systemic disorder?
It depends on what stage you catch it at. If it is limited to the lung, that's considered a fairly early stage. Okay. And it's limited, then that determines what treatment options are available. But most cancers, or all cancers, have the ability to spread throughout the body. And that just means that that the options available for treatment are then limited.
And so, Dr. Coleman, you mentioned earlier about staging with some of the techniques that you do earlier. How does the staging of lung cancers work? Is it like staging of other cancers, or is it unique?
So as far as the lung cancer, we have a couple different things we go about. We do imaging studies, something called PET-CT. So it's very similar to regular CAT scan. You just get injected with sugar, and that sugar gets picked up by cells that have a lot of activity. So that
but
can
it's,
tell
it's
us.
But it's radioactive, though.
Parts of the body.
So point out, it's a radioactive carbohydrate, is it not?
Trying to keep it simple. Yes, correct. yes. So that's the first part of our staging process. Okay. As far as lung cancers, once we diagnose the nodule, we do have different cameras that has our ultrasound at the tip of the camera. And with that, we can visualize lymph nodes that are sitting outside the airways. And there are different stations of the lymph nodes we can go after, which will provide us with different staging of the lung cancer.
Cool. And we're going to take a break, Drs. Wallace and Coleman. We're right back on Health 411 after these brief underwriting announcements. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health.
From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health. There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 1077TheBronx.com. Welcome back to Health 411. We are having a conversation today with Dr. Deanna Coleman and Dr. Africa Wallace from Capital Health. Both of them are involved with lung health. And some of the questions we're asking the two doctors have to do with awareness of lung issues, awareness of lung cancer and what the system's going to be. Can you tell us about some of the things you're doing in the community to make sort of the community aware of lung issues, besides appearing on Health 411?
Well, November is officially Lung Cancer Awareness Month. And so we have several events, community events that the hospital is supporting, where we are wearing t-shirts because we've deemed ourselves as the Lung Squad. So on for our lung nodule clinic days, we have our shirts just to have people talk about lung health. The color pearl is the color for lung cancer awareness. So tomorrow on November the 1st, it's Wear Your Pearls Day. On November the 2nd, we actually have an inflatable lung at the hospital where you can walk through the lung and you can see what nodules look like and you can see the anatomy of the lung. And at the same time, we'll have educational pamphlets to talk about who should get screened, talk about smoking cessation, and talk about lung health. Later on that night, on November the 2nd, we are having a Shine the Light walk. So Shine the Light is in honor of lung cancer survivors and those that have passed on. So we've invited patients, their family, community members, and we will have a symbolic walk around the campus at dusk with lights to shine a light on lung cancer. On the 16th is the Great American Smokeout. We will have table events at the hospital for our staff. And then at the end of the month, we have a lung cancer symposium, which is an educational forum where we talk about access to lung cancer care, prevention of lung cancer care, and then management of lung cancer care. So those are some of the things that we're doing at the hospital to highlight Lung Cancer Awareness Month in November.
Cool. And I'm gonna go out there and assume that the only month that you shouldn't think about lung cancer, the only time to think about lung cancer is not just in the month of November. I'm willing to bet that you guys say you should be aware of it year round.
Think about it
daily.
<Yeah.
laughs>
Yes. Yes. Now, and coming back to the treat, because some of the treatment and the physiology stuff sort of is very interesting to me. The one thing that I didn't hear you say that you work with in terms of collaborating and in the holistic treatment of the patient is the people who are involved with addiction treatments. Do you also work with them to try to beat the nicotine addictions? If you can get people through to lung cancer, is that something that I'm assuming most patients would want to beat that?
Yeah, we actually developed a smoking cessation program here at Capital Health 2 years ago. It was the first one at the hospital where we have a counselor who holds, a 6 to 8 week course. You can sign up for free. There are weekly counseling sessions and the nicotine replacement therapy is provided for free by the hospital. So that is one of our projects as well in not only treating your cancer, but helping you stop smoking. We know that smoking is the number one risk for lung cancer, but we also know that people who are going through treatment do worse if they continue to smoke. In addition to that, smoking contributes to many other disease processes such as cardiovascular disease, cerebrovascular disease and stroke, peripheral vascular disease, as well as several other cancer disease processes in the body. So it is not just about lung cancer for us, it is about your overall health when we talk about smoking cessation.
Wow. That's a list that I guess you have to be careful when you go out socially to a cocktail party and you watch people, their behaviors. I say that, no, I can't, I don't know. It would be funny to watch people in the community and engage and say, you know, you're a future patient in the making. And I say that trying to be a kidding sort of way.
You need to speak up and tell people they should stop if I know you or not. So, yeah.
Good
you know,
for you.
And then I say that was just my public service announcement and walk away. but I am an advocate for smoking cessation.
Yeah, as we all are. Especially in this part of the country, is it wrong to think that some lung problems, whether it's cancer or just, you know, inflammation, come about just because of the quality of air we breathe in the local community?
We're going to be seeing more and more of this. Our air quality has been changing, and I'm sure both of you scientists know that over X amount of time now, we've been having higher levels of CO2, more air particles. So down the line, all of this is going to be affecting our lung function. Any lung disease is related to either smoking, secondhand smoke exposure, your environmental exposures, people who were 9/11 who've been exposed to all the dust, they're coming with popcorn lungs, interstitial lung diseases. So anything that's bad we're inhaling into your lungs will have detrimental effect on our lungs down the line. Now, if you cut down smoking or vaping, putting any other chemicals in your lungs, hopefully you would at least slow down any progression of bad things happening in your lungs.
Cool. Is our lungs regenerative organs? Like people say the liver sort of is. If people stop drinking, you get some tissue regeneration, or is it not?
No.
So
no.
You're both
certain
right, no.
Inflammatory changes related to certain benign processes can get better, but most of the things that we're seeing, especially emphysema, which is damage to your lung tissue, fibrotic changes, none of it is reversible.
And so the hope is that if you stop smoking or if you remove the insult, that it will not progress, mm-hmm. and that at least you can get your lung healthy enough so that it can compensate for the damage that's been done.
Wow, you guys are getting me nervous again. And if I want to get my lungs checked out, how does that start? I probably should not start by showing up at your door. How do I start a conversation with a physician saying, look, I'm breathing this stuff or whatever? How does the conversation about lungs happen? Because it's unlike, you know, some things that you can see on the outside. You're not bleeding. So how does the conversation with what's the entry to the healthcare system for most people?
Most of the times you will see initially a primary care physician. So primary care physician will refer patients who are smokers to pulmonologists with suspicion that if you're a smoker, you do have underlying lung disease like COPD. But if you have any other symptoms, even post-COVID, cough, shortness of breath, dyspnea with exertion, walking up the stairs, any of those simple symptoms can lead your primary care physician or pulmonologist that you're going to be seeing to get a pulmonary lung function test. It's a test that checks your lungs, your volumes, your airway resistance, mm-hmm. and gives you specific diagnoses that can be potentially treated.
So it sounds like that you're sort of saying you guys are assuming that if somebody is a smoker, there is some degree of compromised lung function in there. It's a matter of
correct
when you're going to find it or how bad it is when it first shows up. But it's already there if you're a long-term smoker.
Correct.
Most of the time.
Wow. There is your public service announcement to get people to stop smoking. You know, I think that is an effect. It's like as soon as you start doing this, the damage is there. How much do you want to do it to yourself? You guys agree?
Agree.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. With that happy thought, we're sort of running out of time. And I want to thank our two guests, Dr. Deanna Coleman and Dr. Africa Wallace of Capital Health. Both of them work in the pulmonary units there. You've been great guests, and I hope this has been a good conversation to get our listeners thinking about lung health. This is 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. We're recording live from the Digital Bronx Studios. Thank you for listening. listening. This program is part of Capital Health and Rider University efforts to bring people together to address issues associated with all aspects of health and healthcare. And we hope today's conversation has given you things to think about in terms of how healthy your lungs are and things you might be doing about them. If you have questions and or comments about this program or want to make suggestions for future broadcasts, please email us at health411@rider.edu.
Remember, you have a doctor's appointment scheduled for every Sunday at 10 a.m. Don't miss the all-new Health 411 with Dr. Jonathan Karp and our expert medical guest from Capital Health. You can listen to Health 411 anytime on demand. Go to 1077thebronc.com/health411 to listen to past episodes or tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. to hear the weekend rewind edition of Health 411. Health 411 on 1077 The Bronc is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.